Back here on In Focus, News Radio KMAN, we're talking the history of street names here, specifically in Manhattan, with Raleigh County Historical Museum Executive Director Cheryl Collins. And we've been talking here about Allen Road specifically, and you've got some more on him and the Allen family.
Yeah, they are a very interesting story. Frank Allen's uncle and aunt, William F. and Flora Allen, had three daughters, and the oldest daughter, Marion, had a school friend, Ivy Chandler. And around the turn of the century, Ivy got acquainted with Frank Allen through his cousin, Marion. The Chandler family also lived along the Blue and also had interesting connections, but I won't go into those today. Anyway, the Chandlers were less than enthusiastic about Ivy keeping company with Frank Allen, and they did all they could to discourage the match. However, Frank and Ivy had an ally in Flora Allen, and she made her home at 1724 Fairchild open for the pair for visiting. Frank and Ivy eloped July 1st, 1900, and Flora Allen held a small family wedding lunch for the couple, and then the couple went home to a tent Frank was living on at a rented farm. After 2 weeks, the Chandlers decided to accept Frank, rented them a house, and Mr. Knox loaned Frank a team for farming. In 1901, their first daughter, Cora, was born, and in 1902, they decided to try out Oklahoma. Oklahoma was not a success. A jealous husband shot his wife in the next room at the rooming house they were staying in, and the Allens decided to come home to Kansas, where Frank went to work with Henry Strong on his dairy farm. In 1903, Frank's skill in swimming and lack of fear of the Big Blue River was very useful. During the 1903 flood, several people were trapped in their homes on the Blue Bottom. Mrs. Eli Blokowski and her newborn baby and two little children were trapped in the upstairs of their home. Frank took a small rowboat across the swift current and brought them to safety. During the 1908 flood, he was again called on to rescue Ivy's grandmother, Sarah Hepler, out of her home on the east end of Knox Lane. He also rescued Eli Blokowski and John Shumway, and John Shumway was a brother-in-law to William Allen, when their car was stalled on East Marlette and they had to spend the night in a tree. 1908 was when Frank bought his own dairy farm. By 1908, the family had six children. Two more children would come by 1911. All the children helped on the farm, and Frank laid out Allen Road as the children's shortcut to Strong School. In 1916, he discontinued the dairy and took a job with Raleigh County as a road foreman. He continued to farm as well and expanded his holdings in the Blue Bottom in the 1920s. During the 20s, his daughters began marrying and starting families of their own. Ivy and Frank enjoyed grandchildren starting in 1923, and the last grandchild was born in 1952. In 1935, the Allens built a new house on their property. Later, their daughter built next door so that she could take care of the old folks. Eventually, the Allens sold their farmland to developers, putting in housing. Ivy Circle and Lane is named for Ivy Allen. KMAN Radio is on part of the land that they sold. In 1936, Frank retired from active farming and retired from the county. And the next year, they bought a new Chevrolet and drove to Washington State to visit Frank's sister, Emma. The Allens celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary in 1950. Frank Allen died March 14, 1954. At the time of his death, he had 31 living grandchildren and 24 great-grandchildren. Ivy Allen died in April 1977. So that's at least part of the story of Frank and Ivy Allen and Allen and Ivy Rhodes.
Nice. Well, it's interesting to me, and I heard some of the names of some other families that they were associated with, and I heard the name Knox. Is that why Knox Lane is essentially the same road as Allen Road there?
Knox was for that family that lived along there, and the Knox family was a very prominent family.
Okay. It's interesting. There's not too many roads like that where, you know, it splits. It's Allen on one side and it's Knox over here. So
they try not to do that, I think.
Yeah. Anymore, yeah.
Sometimes you inherit those things. But what I like is streets and roads that have a connection to our local people and places, and that those names reflect the unique and interesting past that we share. So I really hope new roads, local connected names are chosen. I guess that can get you into trouble because, you know, I don't think necessarily to have something named for you, you have to be a paragon of virtue. So, you know, although that's come up over and over recently, for me personally, I don't see that as a requirement.
So we see names of people here in the streets, but then you see roads like Little Kitten Avenue. How does that come about?
Well, and I don't know if Connie has anything about that one. Maybe we can...
Yeah, I don't know.
No, Connie doesn't have that in there, but we could come... I can see for a future time.
Okay.
Maybe if I could find some more about that. And that's something that I wanted to mention. If people have topics of history they'd like to know more about, let us know. And for future topics, we can research those and come back with more on those particular pieces of history.
Now, there's ins and odds, and maybe this would be a topic for a future conversation, but, you know, I was coming back from Emporia the other day, and, you know, the Riley County line, the border on the south side, if you come up 177, is just north of the interstate.
Right.
But then there is a portion of Riley County that I-70 goes through. It's just a small portion.
Very small portion, yes.
And maybe kind of the story behind why that is, you know.
Why I-70 got to be where I-70 was.
Yeah, yeah. I think that'd be kind of interesting.
In a nutshell, Junction City had the influence.
I see.
Yes, there were some folks there who had significant political influence, and I think that paid off. Although, I think you could look at that in different ways, because one of the things I've read about is towns that have major interstates going through them have the upside of that traffic and potential for people to stop, but they also have the downside because major interstates are also highways for crime.
Right.
And so you also have that. So that's the downside to it. So in some ways, perhaps Manhattan came out well being close to the interstate, but not being right on it.
Just imagine if that had gone a different way, I imagine it would have come up probably through Ogden on K-18, and Fort Riley Boulevard might be part of the interstate at this point. And that'd be a real oddity. Maybe it would have followed Highway 24 from there. I don't know, but...
Yeah, it would be interesting because, of course, the portion of Fort Riley Boulevard in Manhattan proper is the old railroad bed for the Rock Island Railroad.
Okay.
And that didn't go out till the 1980s. So that would not have been available for use in a highway until much later. So it would have had to have been laid out in some other way. So, you know, in terms of historic properties being preserved, maybe that's a good thing too, because my suspicion is you would have, in laying things out, you probably would have lost things.
Yeah, I mean, the Conser Prairie might look a little different here.
Yes, there could be a lot of things that looked very different with that. But it is very interesting to see how roads get laid out. And of course, roads are of prime importance. They're like railroads were in the days of the railroad. And being connected to railroads, the more the better, was what every town was working for, because it was a huge economic benefit. And now interstates kind of fill that.
Well, you can see it in just some of the way some of the roads in the town are laid out. That probably wasn't the original intent. Like when you're coming down Tuttle Creek and you see 3rd Street and there's that little turn
that
off
odd.
There. That's not intentional. I'm sure that was just a product of poor design.
Well, or trying to make do with what you had because, you know, they were trying to lay roads over old traffic patterns and things. And, of course, the change in there was the Blue River. I mean,
yeah.
The Blue River with Tuttle Creek being put in was all changed, and I do have sympathy for road engineers. It, I think, can be very tricky to get things road laid out properly because, of course, they have a lot of criteria for safety in terms of how, you know, bends, how much degree of bend you have in a road, and how much room you need for the road for shoulders and all of those things. So it can be very tricky, I think.
You know, my wife is starting, she's going to be a ESOL teacher at Lee Elementary this fall, but she's worked in some summer school classes here this summer, and she mentioned the other day that she had a kid mentioning that we don't have any rivers nearby, and it of course we do. We have the Kansas River and the Big Blue, but it's fascinating because living here in the community, you don't see them every day because you got the levee and you don't see the Big Blue at all. It's hidden away.
Well, and I know Phil Anderson would like to correct that because he and a group that is interested in seeing Manhattan develop its riverfront have been working for a while now on that. So he'd be a good person to have in to talk about rivers and
yes.
And what it could do to have a riverfront. Because you're right, it is hard to see the connection now, whereas originally the confluent, the Blue and Kansas River, was at the foot of Points Avenue. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was right there. And that's where the crossing was, the foot of Points Avenue. So it was very directly connected. And, of course, we do notice the rivers when we get floods.
Yes, that's the one time we notice them.
Otherwise, and we really notice them.
Yeah.
And, of course, we just had the 70th anniversary of the 51 flood.
Right.
And, of course, we had some flood warnings for the Wildcat Creek just this last week. And, you know, if you live close to rivers, that's going to happen. I mean, there's just, it's not if it happens, it's when will it happen.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think more should be known about the riverfront. And that I like Phil Anderson's idea. I think it'd be a great one. Hopefully that's something that at some point could get implemented. But I know it's a costly endeavor.
Well, I think they're looking at taking it in steps, mm-hmm. and I think they've got some ideas about what steps they could be taking to move in that direction. So I think it'd be good to have Phil on.
Absolutely. I'll have to reach out. Well, Cheryl, it's sure nice to talk to you here in person, and we'll see you again next time.
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
Yeah. Well, we're glad to have you back. Coming up tomorrow on the show, we'll have our city folks in. City Manager Ron Fear and Mayor Wynn Butler will join us. And that's looking forward to our program tomorrow.